yesterday, as members of the ad hoc committee on filling of vacancies in the Commission for Gender Equality. We have received a few apologies from some of the members who can't make it to the meeting today. And those that are not able to make it today cannot join us tomorrow because you have to be part of the entire process for you to then, as a member, to deliberate on the outcome. From the ANC, we have Honorable Vincent Smith, who has withdrawn from the committee. He's on oversight visit. As well as Advocate Sibanyon, who's also chairing another ad hoc committee tomorrow. And as a result, he will not be able to be part of this committee. We have replaced those with one member from the ANC, Honorable Moloki. And we have apologies from Honorable Dabi, who's on the study tour, Honorable Zigalala, who's also on the study tour, and Honorable Duncan, who's attending the Protection Bill meeting. We are ready to proceed. Before we call our first candidate, we would want to again reflect on what is expected of us today, the process that we have used in arriving to where we are, and what is it that we are going to do moving forward. We have set aside 2 days for interviews, which is today and tomorrow. And we will be interviewing 7 candidates today that are shortlisted, and 7 tomorrow. The process of shortlisting was open and transparent, and all members of the ad hoc committee had an opportunity to express their views. We ended up with 16 candidates, and one of them has pulled out, so we are left with 15. We also have received the process of shortlisting also was very interesting in the sense that we had enough time to engage in that exercise. We were given the CVs of all the candidates in December, and we had an opportunity to consult as members of different political parties with our principal organization, as well as members of the community. Because we believe that those that are going to be shortlisted were also people that would be known by the public. We then regrouped to do the actual shortlisting. After we had concluded that process, I have to state in here that I received a number of letters and phone calls from different organizations. One of the letters that I received and the phone call was from the chairperson of the Gender Commission, who wanted a particular candidate that had not been shortlisted, who is currently serving in the commission, to be included in the shortlisted candidate. She was also not completely happy with the serving commissioners who were shortlisted. And she cited the reasons that are contained in the report that we have no mandate to deal with as this ad hoc committee. It is something that we discussed in the beginning, and we came to a conclusion as this committee that we are not mandated to deal with the report. It is another process. Our mandate is to fill the vacancies in the Commission for Gender Equality. Any allegation or any information contained in that report would be dealt with by those that would be charged with the responsibility of dealing with that report. Therefore, we cannot, as this committee, exclude any candidate on the basis of what is in that report, in as much as we cannot include any candidate on the basis of what is in that report. Those are two different processes. And we also are guided by a principle that says any person who is alleged to have done anything cannot be excluded in any process until that person has been found guilty by a court of law. And in this situation, there is no person who is in this list who has served in the Commission for Gender Equality that has been found guilty by any court of law. So there is no candidate that will be excluded on those bases. But also, it would be improper for us to delegate the responsibility of shortlisting candidates to outside bodies when it is our mandate. Therefore, the submission by the chairperson of the Commission for Gender Equality, in my view, is not in order, in a sense that it creates an impression of some sort of bias towards a particular candidate. And the Commission for Gender Equality cannot appoint commissioners. That responsibility is the responsibility of Parliament, discharged by this ad hoc committee. I thought it was important for us to clear that up front. Other submissions that have been sent to my office are from, I would say, a cluster of non-governmental organizations that are calling themselves the civil society. The submission in support of the work of this ad hoc committee, as well as the interest in having a commission for gender equality that is able to execute its mandate effectively, efficiently, and is able to effect change in this country. That we share the views expressed on that. We, however, would not expect that that support would go to as far as suggesting the question that this ad hoc committee needs to ask to candidates. And some of the organizations listed as members of that civil society have candidates shortlisted for interviews that are currently working for those organizations. I looked at this and to me it's more like when the matric students are going to sit for examination. They then form a group of their representatives who then put down the question that the examiners should actually ask to the matriculant, to the matric student. I found that very much worrying in two ways. It suggests that there is no capacity here in Parliament to ask relevant questions. The very same Parliament that passed the act that is today, that gave birth to the establishment of the Commission for Gender Equality. That is number one. Number two, it also violates the principle of equal opportunity and equal competition, because had we taken those questions and put them as the questions, it would then have meant that candidates from those organizations would be advantaged, and those that come from other organizations would be disadvantaged in terms of the questions that are going to be asked. And we would want to appeal to the civil society to instead play a monitoring role instead of taking over the responsibility of parliament. The third submissions were submissions that were again coming from the civil society and some of the universities, that were more related in terms of making the ad hoc committee have a better understanding of what the Commission for Gender Equality is all about. I also find that somehow undermining also the intelligence, the intellectual capacity that exists in Parliament, to suggest that the very same institution that gave birth to the Commission for Gender Equality and is charged with the responsibility of transforming this country would have in a committee members that can't ask the relevant questions and also don't understand the role of the Commission for Gender Equality, the mandate of the Commission for Gender Equality, and how it relates to the entire transformation process and agenda of this country. I think it is one area that maybe in future we would need to engage the civil society on. Interviews are not public hearings. Processes of parliament allow public input when we are processing the bills and policies. We take the views of the public. I've never said in any interview as a member of the panel in which questions would come from outside that particular structure. And I think that it is important for us to set that record straight. So this committee has been put under enormous pressure, unnecessary pressure, and expected to act in a way that is beyond its mandate. We have prepared questions. We have 8 questions, and we have 7 members of the committee, including myself. We'll give each member a question to ask, and we will also allow follow-up questions from members. Each candidate will get 45 minutes in terms of time for the interview. If it happens that that person allow that to happen, I will then open 5 minutes for members to comment and say, ask questions of clarity if there are any. We also have a score sheet that has been prepared for us. We will have the name of the candidate, and we will score the candidates between 1 and 10. And then we will also have general comments in terms of our assessment. And then right at the end, we will look at all the points from all the members and arrive at the average score by bringing together all the points that each member has got on each candidate. So the column that has got average doesn't get filled right at the beginning. It gets filled when we do the second round now of how each member scored the candidate, and then we arrive at the average. Then the general comments would be based on the observation of how each member, what each member would have observed in terms of the strengths and the value and whatever from the from each particular candidate. Again, I would give members an opportunity to ask questions of clarity in terms of this.
Excuse me, thank you, Chair. You've just given us a number, 10. However, there's no indication of what should be, you know, fall into the category of good, average, poor. So you might have a different interpretation amongst the people. You know, somebody might say that good is 7 out of 10. Somebody else might think 8 or, you know, whatever. So I think one should have a uniform system so that we know whether we're saying good, very good, poor, average. Otherwise, this it can be distorted.
I would have thought that the numerical scoring makes it easier to add up than good, very good, fair, because you can't add. In my view, I can't add, I can't get what what is the average of fair plus good, and what is the average of fair plus very good?
Clarity. I wasn't indicating. We certainly need the numbers, but having been a teacher myself, I know that standards vary. And one person might say that good is 9 or 8. Somebody else may say 5 is good or 7. So I think we just need to have an idea of the range of what falls into good, very good, or average, something like that.
Honorable Shula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm thinking that you are all getting this scoring sheet. Maybe some of us have been not teachers when experts in this parliament, teachers and the rest. So I'm thinking that I'm covered by the general comments after we have scored that will assist and accommodate what the honourable member is saying. That's my understanding, and I'm feeling that this scoring sheet is in order, but subject to be corrected.
The amendment that I would think that we would need to effect here is to number the questions, because a candidate would not get the same mark for all the questions. It is therefore necessary that we have question one, question two, question three, all that, so that we are then able to measure as to where the strength actually lies. So instead of having score out of 10, we should be having for each question score out of 10. And then we are then able to know that on question one, this is what the candidate scored. Question two, this is what the candidate scored. And then we have a total. And then we would use that total to arrive at the average. And then below that, we would then have the general comments. And the general comments would then refer to what the two honorable members have referred to, that you may find that a candidate is strong on a particular area and you would want to comment on that. And it would then give us a fair assessment of the candidate. Like, for instance, I'm just making an example. If a person is a good communicator, you would get an opportunity of putting that down. And if a person is a very good person in terms of having demonstrated the research skills, things that are important but are not, one would not respond to in a question form. It is an observation that you would make when you are interviewing a person. A person who is assertive, a person who is not a good listener, those are the things that you would then put under general comment. Are we fine? Okay. Can we then amend the score sheet to accommodate what we have just suggested, that we must have the score out of 10 for each question, and then which would then mean that the total is 80, because we have 8 questions and we have 10 points for each question. Question number 3. Honorable Mashiko, take question number 4. Honorable Julane, to take question number 6. Honorable Ramotive, to take question number 7. And Honorable Moloto to take question number 8. I will have a second bite and take question number 5. In terms of the quorum of this committee, we do correct. Can call the candidate. the chairperson of the ad hoc committee on filling of vacancies in the Commission for Gender Equality. Let me start by apologizing for the late start. We are very sorry that you had to wait. We have invited you for an interview. By different members of this ad hoc committee. We are all members of parliament charged with the responsibility of selecting the best candidate to fill in the vacancies. And we take the Commission for Gender Equality as the most, as one of the most important institutions in our country. We understand the challenges that have been there in the past, and we are hopeful that the candidates that we have shortlisted are the best candidates from which we will then make our final selection. Thank you for availing yourself. Is there any question that you would want to ask before we start?
No, thank you, Chair. I'm fine.
Thank you. I'll take the first question. What is your understanding of the role of the Commission for Gender Equality?
Thank you, Chair. But obviously, the starting point is the constitutional mandate as elaborated further in the Gender Equality Act. We have a clear mandate to promote respect for gender equality and to ensure that gender equality is protected within South Africa, that it's promoted and that's attained, that it is attained. And there are various means and functions of the CGE to that end, which the CGE Act speaks to be able to promote and protect gender equality, such as the duties around monitoring states, implementation of gender equality obligations, educating and raising awareness within diverse communities, receiving complaints of discrimination, advising Parliament. So I see that as its primary function.
Thank you. Take the next question from the next member. Can we have the...
I'm sorry. Denise Robinson. How do you see the role of the Commission of Gender Equality in relation to the newly established Ministry for Women, Youth, Children and People with Disabilities?
I think it's important to note, if one starts simply with the name of that ministry, it's a Ministry for Women, Children and People with Disability, whereas the Commission for Gender Equality is exactly that. It's a commission tasked to look more broadly at matters of gender equality. I think also we need to look at the location of the two institutions. We know that our gender policy framework and the creation of the national gender machinery speaks about the need for a focus within the executive. And I would see this new ministry, this department, as government's best effort to date in terms of locating an executive function to address issues relating to the status of women, for instance. But the gender policy framework still specifically states that we require an independent statutory body. For while we may have a more focused and more powerfully situated function within the executive. That itself still needs to be monitored. We still require an institution such as the CGE to monitor the extent to which government is implementing, whether that's through the Women's Ministry or aided. So I do see very distinct functions. Clearly there's room for collaboration and overlap, and I think that is good. That doesn't mean that either institution is therefore no longer required. But I would say the specific focal areas, women, children, people with disability, as opposed to gender equality, and that location of an executive function, as opposed to an independent monitoring statutory function, would distinguish the two entities.
Another question?
Thank you. What do you think are the reasons for the Commission to not effectively discharge its functions at the moment?
The member places me in a difficult position because I'm still currently part of the Gender Commission, and I do believe we are discharging our function at the moment. I know that spectacularly in the past we've been criticized for not doing that. And there were various reasons around that related to internal dysfunctions in terms of systems, mismanagement internally, division and political rifts between stakeholders, and I believe those factors got in the way of the discharge of the duty. I think that was further exacerbated, and it's still a challenge for the CGE, the inadequacy of resources. The institution receives an inferior treasury grading when compared to the Human Rights Commission, for instance. So there's a very limited budget with which to work, which then has an impact on, for instance, the extent of outreach or the extent of litigation. Having said that, I believe that with the limited resources and the limited pool of commissioners, we now have a full retention of staff, just about. I do believe that the CGE is discharging its function. If you trace our annual reports and the reports submitted to Parliament, I believe that this is a functional entity. We've got a clean audit. I'm speaking as a current commissioner now, and I'm trying to get to the other edge of your question. But I do believe that it is a functional entity. It is working.
The next question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Hicks, your position is as a gender current gender commissioner is understood. But what changes do you think need to be made to make the Commission of Gender Equality more effective in executing its mandate?
Areas where I feel improvement are required, apart from I think they're overarching issues. One would be around particularly the first Honourable Member's comment around greater understanding between itself and the Women's Ministry in terms of specific role and mandate and collaboration. And the second overarching issue would be effective resourcing. I do feel those are two constraints. But then internally, in terms of challenges and where I feel there's a need for change, I think we are on track in terms of adequate systems that have been put in place. Obviously, that has been a priority focus in light of previous disclaimers and qualified audits. And I think there's been a lot of focus on getting systems correct and ensuring clean audit. I think the focus now has to shift towards performance management, looking at staff morale and productivity. We're a mixed bag. We have some offices that function very effectively and are very productive because they are effective and productive individuals, whereas in some provinces where there's an individual that's not performing, that brings down the whole impact and reach of the organization. So I do think we need to look at staff capacity, staff morale, and I think we need to constantly look at, I think, monitoring and evaluation that's linked with the performance management. It's something that we need to focus on as well.
Thank you, Ms. Hicks. What is your understanding of the challenges in our society that the Commission for Gender Equality needs to respond to?
If I can take that in two pieces, Madam Chair. I think a key challenge that we're still needing to overcome in terms of the role that the state is playing in addressing inequality, in addressing the particular challenges that women are facing. I think we need to look at our own state, our government department's understanding of gender equality. I'm hugely concerned. I feel that the gender equality project has been diminished. I think it's become a women's empowerment project. We're not seeing the adequate engendering of state policies. When we're looking at long-term planning processes or monitoring evaluation processes or our Vision 2025 processes, these are not being engendered. When we look at our poverty interventions, they're not being adequately engendered. We have a slate of projects that are designed to empower women, and they're largely social development-related initiatives. So I see the state as a driving force that should be bringing about change in the life, the quality of life of ordinary women. And I feel that we're failing to do that through our existing policy programs. We're not tracking progress. We don't have adequate targets and systems in place to monitor that. So internally within the state, I think there's still work that needs to be done to address that range of issues. When I look at where the challenges are within society, and particularly because I come from the province of KwaZulu-Natal, but I give support as well to the province of Mpumalanga. And where we're seeing greatest challenges are in areas of poverty, in education, gender-based violence, HIV and AIDS, and health-related issues. And I think those are problems that have beset us for a long time. They've not gone away. They've, in fact, got worse. And I think that is where our focus needs to be. There's duplication, I think there's overlap, and obviously the starting point is to look at the South African Human Rights Commission. We've all used that slogan for decades now, women's rights or human rights. And obviously as the Human Rights Commission, they're looking at an indivisible and interrelated set of rights. But having said that, I think what we must go back to the deliberations that took place before 1996 and the drafting of the interim constitution, that there was recognition that while we need a body such as the Human Rights Commission, there is specifically a need for a separate institution such as the Commission for Gender Equality because of the patriarchal nature of our society, because of the extent of discrimination and inequality on the basis of gender. So while the Human Rights Commission may have the broad remit of addressing human rights violations, for instance, I think the CGE's focus is very particular and is still required. I think it would be premature to say that there's no need for something like a gender commission because of that embedded nature of patriarchy and because of those attitudes and perceptions and because of the lived inequalities and the impact that it has on ordinary women. So to have a specific focus where we are receiving complaints, where we're driving awareness, raising interventions, where we're engaging with specific stakeholders to try and counter those attitudes, those prejudiced and stereotypical attitudes to gender, whether that's amongst men or women. So there's overlap, which means it doesn't mean that that's a problem that we need to sort out. I think it is good and it needs to be exploited. And I know specifically in our province of KwaZulu-Natal, we work very well. We formed a provincial Chapter 9 forum, and we meet with the Human Rights Commission and the Office of the Public Protector and the Independent Electoral Commission and arrange joint processes and refer cases to each other. So I don't see it as a duplication. I see it as an overlap, and I see it as space for collaboration. Thank you.
Another question?
idea about the Commission for Gender Equality. And one perception is that a Commission for Gender Equality is an organization that has failed to carry out its mandate. Another perception is that it is an organization that is based on feminism and should be driven by feminists. Now, my first question is, what is your perception about the Commission for Gender Equality? And then secondly, what should the Commission for Gender Equality do to change this perception so that society could perceive it for what it was established for?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Member in this instance. I think, and I have, as a commissioner, have encountered particularly civil society organizations who, and particularly when we came into our term in 2007, who were bitterly disappointed. I think that was the prevailing sentiment, bitterly disappointed in feeling that the CGE had failed them. And I think that that perception stemmed from the sense that the CGE was not using its independent status adequately, that it was not being a critical voice, that it was not taking action against government, particularly on hard issues that might be of embarrassment to government, that it was not using the powers that had been afforded to it in the Act, so it was toothless, and that it was not being effective, that people weren't aware of the Commission for Gender Equality, they didn't know what issues they could bring to it. So that was, and I think rightly so, I think that was, that had been the experience of many. And I believe, I'll come to the F word, the feminism issue just now. I believe the work that is needed there, we have begun within this current term. I think we've seen a shift in the way that the CGE has been operating, in that this is an institution that has been harshly critical of government departments. It's raised concerns with ministers. It's issued subpoenas to municipal managers, to HODs, to DGs within national and provincial departments. It's been involved in litigation. So it's, I think we're seeing, and I think this would need to continue if we are to transform the reputation and rebuild the image of the CGE, is constantly to be seeing that kind of work being carried out, that taking action on strong issues, making full use of powers, being effective, and I think some of the work that we've been doing, I'm chairing the legal committee, for instance, is to look at our outreach mechanisms. We cannot have an officer sitting in an office waiting for an aggrieved rural community member in the far-flung reaches of the province to come to the office to lodge the complaint. So the CGE has to work in a different way, which again goes back to the staff morale and productivity and effectiveness. I think the CGE needs to be working in different ways to be reaching different parts of the community. I think, again, it also comes down to the way the CGE did work. I think in the past, it behaved something between an NGO and a government department, that we must run workshops. And I don't think workshops are going to solve problems or bring about change. We're not an NGO. Our job's not to train people on what the Act says, but it's to raise awareness and to generate issues and then to act on those issues. I think action is the critical word there. On the issue of feminism, there's sometimes been debate, and I think there should be more debate within the CGE itself, the concern that we, it's a commission for gender equality, yet the focus seems to be on women's issues. What's the thing with women's issues? We need to understand working with men. For me, and I am a feminist, but for me, feminism is a lens. It's an analytical tool that you bring to an issue. You confront it with high levels of gender-based violence. You confront it with women living in situations of poverty, such as in a community like Manyaseni, where we've been working. And you bring your feminist lens to understand what is the problem here? Why are we seeing these levels of violence? Why are we not seeing service delivery reaching within these pockets? So it's a tool to understand a problem which then generates appropriate solutions and policy recommendations to address that. Having said that, within the CTE, I think in the current term we've made great strides, and probably the word needs to get out more around the fact that it's not just a women's rights organization. I think our latest secret weapon is to be working with men's groups and men's forums. They've been immensely effective in leading campaigns against gender-based violence and finding men champions to speak out on matters of gender equality, but to also pick up on issues that affect men. We initiated a process in KwaZulu-Natal. We were concerned about male circumcision drive there and the use of the Tara clamp and the impact that this has on male health rights, especially adolescent men. That's an issue that we've taken up. We've been very outspoken on lesbian, gay, transgendered, bisexual and intersex community rights, and have been campaigning and taking up issues, particularly around rapes and attacks on lesbians. So I think, again, within the CGE, and again the message that goes out, we need to reflect that this is an organization that addresses a broad range of gender equality issues. But even if we are using our powers and even if we are doing the work we need to do, we still need to get that positive message out. And coming back to one of the earlier questions, that's an area that needs to be addressed. We tend to get a lot of media attention when there's something wrong, and very little media attention when we're doing something right. So that's a case of needing to use our smarts and our strategy to raise awareness on the work that we're doing.
Next question.
Thank you, Ms. Six. My question is, what value would you personally add to the Commission for Gender Equality to make it function efficiently and effectively and become more relevant to issues of gender inequalities in our society?
Thank you. I think the personal value that I would bring in terms of enhancing the work of the CGE, and I would split it in accordance with the dual nature of my job. The one is the oversight and administrative function, which is a key and primary role of commissioners. I have long been a member of our audit committee, and I'm a member of our CEO's performance review committee. I see those as critical tasks. As part of the audit committee, we're constantly going back to auditor general findings and recommendations and looking at issues such as performance management and risk management. So I have experience in that regard in terms of what is required, what are the various treasury and public finance management requirements, and the ability to read financial statements, see through dense reports and extract and identify where issues of concern are and pursue. At the ordinary level of commissioner, also through plenary, I think a critical oversight function is in the very formulation of strategic plans and programs of action. Are those speaking to relevant issues that are affecting societies and ordinary men and women in our communities today? Is there that necessary link between the lived experiences of gender inequality on the ground and the program of action, and does it speak to the CGE Act and our constitutional mandate? So those are, I believe, experience and insight that I bring with me. But further to that, at a program level, because through the various thematic committees that I'm involved in, I've surfaced and brought into the Gender Commission a range of issues that I believe are key to South Africa right now, and that I would like to continue working with and seeing succeed. And I'll just give you one or two examples on that. Have formulated a project. We're working with the Department of Higher Education and Training and partner tertiary institutions of higher education from Fort Hare to UWC to the University of the Free State to look at gender-based violence, violence against women, violence against gays and lesbians on campus and in residences. We're busy researching those instances to develop policy recommendations. And we've got the sanction now of the Minister of Higher Education and Training to take those findings and then develop policy that can be rolled out across all higher institutions of higher learning. So that's a project I'm very attached to and would like to see succeed. But I've brought in additional, I think I've been successful in in working with civil society organizations, I think that fulfilled a critical function of the CTE. I think our job is to be working closely with civil society organizations. We're not the ones who are receiving complaints of gender-based violence, whereas groups such as Tswaranang, Legal Advocacy Center, is. They leverage and bring issues into us that tell us where the system is failing, where state departments are failing, for instance, to implement the Sexual Offences Act. Our job as the Commission then is to act on that and to engage then with the policymakers. So I think I engage well with civil society, and I've got strong networks with a broad range of groups, and I've taken issues that have been brought in and worked them through the CTE committee process so that we've now got concrete projects that will generate change. Another instance is working on maternity benefits for working women. This is something that came up through the Self-Employed Women's Association. We've now got a partnership going with COSATU, where we're tabling recommendations for legislative reform. So I think that's another personal strength that I bring, that networking. I don't just go to workshops and then go home. Take the issues that were raised, bring them in, research them, write concept papers, work them through committee, and then make sure that they followed up. I also believe have a strength in terms of my analytical abilities and the ability to articulate those, whether that's in writing or verbally, and that has proved to be quite useful with the CTE when we've been engaging, whether it's with the Forum of South African Directors General or other entities, that I think I contributes towards enriching the work of the CTE.
Is there any member that has a follow-up question? Honourable Zula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a follow-up question on question number one. CTE is also expected to recommend review of any legislation during your term. Has this ever happened? As you always are reflecting that something has not happened, something has not happened, and after we have told us about the role of CTE, if you can respond to this follow-up question.
Absolutely, the member is correct. We have a role to advise Parliament, to research and advise Parliament, and we definitely, and again through work in some of the committees in which I've been active, have performed exactly that role. If I can give a few examples for the member, and again, working through issues generated through civil society, we've been engaging with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to look at the Sexual Offences Act. We believe that revision is required to the existing draft national policy framework that's been crafted, as well as the Sexual Offences Act itself, because it's out of countenance with the Children's Act. And we're working together with the Women's Ministry and the Legal Department there to bring about change there. I'm also actively engaged with the Women's Ministry in looking at the Gender Equality Bill. We believe that the existing national policy framework for gender equality needs to be legislated, and we need to update and revise that policy. So I'm part of the task team that's been making inputs into developing that bill. Another area where we've been active and programs I've personally been spearheading has been looking at electoral legislation and on issues of 50-50 and women's political representation and participation. And we're in the process, this is another baby that I'm nurturing, we're in the process of engaging with stakeholders who've been working on 50-50 campaign to identify if we are to embed 50-50 in South Africa, which is the best legislative vehicle. Do we need change to electoral legislation? Is it something that we just embed in our Gender Equality Act? Do we leave it within a policy framework and leave it up to parties to implement it themselves? So these have been some of the areas where we're looking for reform. Another area is, again, the area of maternity benefits. We believe that we need to see reform to unemployment insurance legislation and the unemployment insurance fund in itself, because currently the way it's established, it discriminates against self-employed women, such as women falling part of SASEWA, the Self-Employed Women's Association. So, and again, we're working with Kusasi to generate policy recommendations to put before their conference that's coming up shortly. So there have been various areas where we feel legislation itself needs to be reformed, and I've got various projects underway that's working towards that, as well as areas where new policy is needed or new legislation, such as gender-based violence at tertiary institutions. But I think just as a final leg, Honourable Member, is the actual implementation of legislation, such as the Domestic Violence Act and the Sexual Offences Act. We've got the legislation in place, but we're not seeing departments fulfil the obligations that the acts impose on them, and those are areas that need to be addressed as well. So that full range, amending existing, pushing for new, and oversight and follow-up on areas where there are gaps in implementation, I see those as falling under the CGE's mandate, and we've been active in all three areas.
I also have my own follow-up question. In one of your responses, particularly on question number 7, you mentioned that workshops are not going to bring about change. I am linking that response to question number 8, where we are asking you about the value that you would add. And I've noticed that in most of your responses, you talk more of the civil society, and you also relate more to government. How do you relate your understanding of the Commission for Gender Equality to the developmental state that South Africa strives to become, which is more centered on the participation of communities in their own development? Because I get a sense that you are focusing up at government and then the middleman, which is the civil society, if we were to talk the business language in community development. How do you see the link of your venue and the community participation aspect in a country that is striving to become a developmental state, if you believe that workshops will not bring about any change? How would communities then be facilitated to get into that space of their own participation if you don't believe in workshops?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I think we need to look at what we mean by the common understanding of workshop. Workshop being we're coming to train people or raise awareness on the Domestic Violence Act, and we explain to them what is a protection order, how do you go about getting an order. And I think those education and awareness measures are vital. We need basic information like that to go out. But by saying I don't believe workshops will bring about change, I'm not meaning that there is no engagement with communities. What I mean is the nature of the engagement with communities has to change so that we're responding to the issues and the concerns that they are facing. And I'll make it at a very practical level. If we look at the issue of maternity benefits for working women, I don't think the correct approach is to take the unemployment insurance legislation and do an analysis of that and compare it with international law and identify where the problem is and then make submissions on the bill. For me, that's a top end engaging with government, is their constitutional compliance. my approach and the approach that I used in that project was to have consultative dialogues, and that is the process that I'm in love with, consultative dialogues and round tables, where you bring in and you engage with affected stakeholders. So, for instance, we went to Empangeni. The collaboration with civil society is we speak to SASEWA and we talk to AFRA and we say, would you bring in representatives and stakeholders from your groups? Because I'm not a member of Women on Land associations. That's not my niche of work. But I worked through AFRA. They then organized for women farm workers, for domestic workers. SASEWA organized for vendors, women who work as informal traders, to be present at the dialogue. And then we speak with and we engage with those women and we say, what is your experience when you fall pregnant? What access do you have? Were you able to access leave? What happened when you became unemployed? So the starting point is a consultative dialogue. And we're not training them on the UIF and telling them how it's failing them. We're asking them to identify their experiences and how they're suffering and how the current provisions are not meeting their need. Based on those consultative dialogues then, we then engage with the state. And we say, these are the needs and concerns. This is how the existing, because we do that research as well, this is how the existing mechanism is failing. And then we generate solutions. And to my mind, and I come from a public participation background, that is my ethos and my belief, is we need to engage with affected stakeholders. They are the ones, the community members who experience it, are the ones who are best placed to identify alternatives, alternative approaches and solutions. So we were asking women vendors who sell sweets, would you be prepared to allocate 1% of your monthly earnings voluntarily towards a maternity fund so that should you become pregnant, you would be able to draw down and take and have maternity leave. So that consultation, I believe, is essential. So my starting point always is to engage with affected people. Another looming instance, we've got amendments to sex work legislation coming soon. I believe the CGE can't formulate an opinion and argue amongst ourselves about whether or not sex work is a good or a bad thing and whether it constitutes gender-based violence. I, again, want to have a roundtable dialogue. I want to hear from sweat and I want to hear from affected people. Where are the violations of rights taking place? What is best practice that they have witnessed? What would they like to see in law? So that consultation with affected community groups is vital for the CGE to take a position and then for us then to come and engage with you as policymakers and with state departments and say, based on our consultation, and based on engagements with communities, based on our own analysis of legislation, these are our recommendations.
You draw a distinction between an NGO representative consultative approach and a community participatory development approach. Do you draw a distinction between those two?
Absolutely. One's an elite group with access to resources and information and decision making, and one is a group that often is stuck with this NGO because it's the only one who works in their geographical area. I think I'm wanting to verge into local government conversation here. I think the community participation and input is vital directly. Sometimes the NGO groups are useful in terms of assisting to identify community groups and bring people in. Sometimes those NGOs are useful because they've got a bird's eye view of the sector and they're able to do the analysis, like Foreigner, and say, these are the problems with the Sexual Offences Act, these are the problems with the Domestic Violence Act, because they see the complaints, they see the breakdown in the system, and their input and insight is valuable. But you also have to have those direct forms of community participation. So, for instance, when we were engaging with our KwaZulu-Natal legislature and our Provincial House of Traditional Leaders on matters of customary law, gender equality, and we wanted to have conversations around ukuhlolwa and ukuthwala, we went to Amangwani, we went to Amazizi, we went to Mzimkulu. We have to speak with healers, with testers, with young women themselves. You have to have that direct engagement as well. I think it's a problem that besets our democracy overall. We have this notion that representative democracy somehow connect ordinary people with processes of government. But we have to have those forms and channels for direct participation and engagement as well. Our constitution and our legislation require it.
Last comment, Honorable Kamuti.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a very quick, short one. Ms. Hicks, if you were to be appointed, would you like to be appointed as part-time or full-time commissioner?
Chair, I would like to be appointed as full-time. I think there's no such thing as part-time. I think you wind up with two full-time jobs. I'd like to have my focus fully on the work of the CTE, and I think a full-time appointment would give effect to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That brings us to the end of our interview. We would like to thank you very much for first availing yourself, showing an interest in this important institution, but also for the pleasant manner in which you have responded to our questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members, for your well-filled questions. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Ruth Kim. I'm the chairperson of this committee. We would first want to apologize for starting late, and as a result, you come in an hour later. We also would want to thank you for your interest in serving in the Commission for Gender Equality. And we have shortlisted 16 candidates and one pulled out. We shortlisted 15, one pulled out, we are left with 14, I'm sorry. And all those that are left are very good candidates. And we have hope and confidence that we will be able to elect the best out of these very good 14 candidates. And you are one of them. We have 8 questions. There could be a few follow-up questions to ask. And we are a multi-party panel. You have 45 minutes to respond to verbal questions that we're going to be asking. I will have the first bite. What is your understanding of the role of the Commission for Gender Equality?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members. It's an honor to be here. Thank you very much. I must say that it is an honor to be shortlisted among the best that the committee has selected, and thank you for that honor. In my view, the Constitution sets the basis for the establishment of the Gender Commission. It is very clear that as an institution amongst the other institutions, it's supposed to entrench constitutional democracy through ensuring that there is gender equality and promoting gender equality and protecting and developing gender equality in the country. Our constitution states
that our society is to be non-sexist, and it is an ideal that we are all in our society striving for. I believe that Gender Commission was set up for a purpose, and the purpose was to ensure that the nation is accompanied in this process of transforming itself into a non-sexist state, and to ensure that men and women in this country enjoy their human rights, and that that the women are given the dignity that they deserve, and that they play their role in society. The CGE, therefore, is an organization that was set up as a Chapter 9 institution to promote those values of the Constitution. I guess the other question may arise then, what would be the role of the CGE given the fact that we now have a ministry? That answer will, I guess, will come later, but to me they are complementary, those two organizations. The Gender Commission is an independent, non-partisan institution that serves a society at large, and in terms of the CGE Act, a number of functions have been given. Amongst those is monitoring, amongst those is advocacy, amongst those is litigation. There are various other functions that have been put in the CGE Act 39. So I think that it remains relevant despite the challenges that it has faced. Amongst those, I guess, would be the minimal budget that it gets. But I think we remain with an institution that has a fundamental, profound function to perform in our society. Yes, ma'am.
Can we have the next question?
Okay. How do you see the role of the Commission of Gender Equality in relation to the newly established Ministry for Women, Children, and People with Disabilities?
Thank you. I think that I anticipated that question in my first answer. The ministry was campaigned for in this country by women to ensure, as a complementary institution, to ensure that government in particular fast-tracks gender mainstreaming. We will recall that we had an office on the status of women, which had gender focal points sitting somewhere at director level in various government departments, whose voices were not really heard that much in terms of ensuring that the gender mainstreaming is infused in the life, the values, in the processes and policies in each and every government department. So when the ministry was established, it was out of virtually a reflection on what is it that can be put in place to elevate the importance of gender mainstreaming and ensuring that we fast-track issues of women in society, hence the Department of Women. And then, of course, the children and persons with disability was included there, but I'll talk specifically on women. Going through the functions that have been taken on by the department, one can see that there are areas where the two may have to talk. For instance, there's monitoring and evaluation in the ministry, there's also monitoring and evaluation in CGE, and this monitoring evaluation is both on both documents. It's
in government, but also in civil society. So I think that there'll just have to be a way in which the two sit and talk about where the lines are drawn to ensure that there are no overlaps, there are no grey areas. But the major function was to ensure that government departments do really mainstream women statistics, research, and knowledge management, issues of poverty and service and access to government infrastructure was what the Department of Women is expected to do, to push government departments to deliver at all levels, local up to national level, to ensure that government delivers to women of South Africa. And by doing that, then we achieve gender equality, and the dignity of women in this country is observed as the Constitution prescribes. The Gender Equality Commission, really, the role is mainly advocacy, research, and with a view to seeing how far the country is going in meeting the constitutional obligations of society, not only of the state, but the private sector, the media, all sectors of society, religious, traditional, all of them, because the Constitution binds us all as an instrument that was agreed upon by South Africans. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question.
Thank you, Chair. Ma'am, what do you think are the reasons the Commission is not effectively discharging its mandate?
I think that it is a fact that when all these institutions of state were established, they were established with noble ideas. We as a nation, we really wanted to fast track transformation. And I think the first thing that happened was that when the budget was allocated, the reality struck. Going through what the mandate of CGE is, vis-a-vis the budget that the Commission for Gender Equality has got, it is actually a miracle that they've gone as far as they have gone, looking at the annual reports that they have. Because most of the budget that they have really goes to the administrative expenditure because of, whilst they're supposed to be doing research, which is not easy, advocacy, which calls for a lot of meetings and media, and all those are very expensive ventures, but the budget is limited. That's the first one, I think, for me. But the second one is that issues of gender, are seen as soft issues in our society. We have an institution that is struggling to be taken seriously by society because gender is almost seen as an issue that gets talked about but should be forgotten so that we can go on with business. So I think it has not received the profile, the support that an institution should be getting, looking at the budget that the CGE has been receiving. Of course, it's also been in the media that there have been governance issues that crept in some time back, and that also affected now internally. That did affect the functioning of the institution. When you look at the reports again, you see the staff attrition rate is very high. People don't stay. From outside, I can't say what the reason is, but it could very well be that maybe the pull factor for personnel is not strong.
financial rewards or the atmosphere wasn't, it's very difficult from the outside to be able to analyze it. But the major one for me are the first two, the budget and the seriousness which the institution is taken, because the budget indicates how seriously institutions are taken. The mandate is huge, the people are there, but they just don't have enough infrastructure to be able to reach all the corners. Their work is not only just, their mandate only is not only also just South African, but there are instruments that have been signed by South Africa internationally, the CEDAW, the Beijing, and there are reports that have to be done and research done and presented internationally that costs money and a lot of work. So the staff, they are working with very limited resources. So I think they do need some support, a little more support to be able to meet their obligations.
Thank you. Can we have the next question?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Bowman. What changes do you think need to be made to make the Commission for Gender Equality more effective in executing its mandate?
I think the first one is financial. I think there has to be a review of the budget of the Commission for Gender Equality. For an institution to have an impact, you need to go to communities. You need to be visible. And space in the media doesn't come cheap, because you have to buy advertising time. You have to have the infrastructure, and all that costs a lot of money. We are talking about CGE that has to be visible in all the provinces and in all the communities and within institutions of society. Speaking from where I was, there were times when CGE could not be able to reach certain areas because of the limited resources. They don't have enough staff, so there may have to be a way in which, for instance, we establish what you call a community groupings that can be friends of CGE or whatever we can call them, to reach out more to people on the ground so that there is much more visibility. On policy development, I believe from the reports I'm getting, that I was reading as well, that, and from the experience I've had with CGE, is that they do policy review, but maybe the feedback to the public is not as visible as it should be. So there's a lot of work done that just needs to be made much more visible and communicated to the public. It is pleasing to note, going back to the changes in the reports, that the systems have improved administratively, financial management has improved, at least from disclaimers to qualified audit is a road to a clean audit. So it does look like a lot of work has been put in place. There are strategic turnaround strategic documents that are there that need to be worked on and improved. So I think that those changes are already in place. They just need to be strengthened and more visibility for the institution and more rigorous interaction and outreach programs in communities.
Thank you very much. What is your understanding of the challenges in our society that the Commission for Gender Equality needs to respond to?
believe that we are in a society that is still struggling with the concept of gender equality. That's the first one. The Constitution makes it very clear that we are a non-sexist community. But patriarchy is so entrenched in our society that it calls for a lot of education and lots of programs and lots of buy-in throughout society and all the institutions, starting from families and in the education department and so on. So I think the first challenge is that it has to be taken as a given that unless there is gender equality, there shall never be development. And unless we deal with issues of gender and empowerment of girls and women, we cannot be able to deal seriously with issues of poverty and development. Many households these days are households that are led and driven by women. Other households are driven and led by grandparents. So society and people who actually, poverty has been feminized. Unemployment, young people are unemployed. And we have to invest in young women. Our education system has to ensure that we promote and ensure, even at tertiary level, that we prepare young women for the role that they have to play in development, in leadership, and have much more visibility of leadership as we see here. Issues of gender-based violence, it is scary that in 2012 we are still dealing with so much violence against women and children and young girls in particular. And that is a problem that cannot be solved necessarily by the Commission for Gender Equality, nor can it be solved by civil society organizations. It's an effort that everyone has got to buy into, to create a peaceful society where the dignity of women and children is respected. It is a challenge that it is difficult to analyze, maybe with more research, why there doesn't seem to be a solution. Whether people are more knowledgeable, they are able to report cases, but the cases of violence against women are shocking. And those are some of the issues. Leadership, governance, in the monitoring that is being done by other organizations, there seems to be a reversal of the gains that started in 94 in terms of women leadership at various institutions. The causes of that, I guess we just have to remain vigilant as society to ensure that the 50% that has been agreed upon at AU and even in South Africa is adhered to, so that we give the women enough opportunities to participate in governance and leadership in our country.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question was partly answered in question number two, but because I want more elaboration on it. Question number six, I'm saying, do you think there is a duplication in terms of the mandate of the Commission for Gender Equality and any of other Chapter 9 institutions? If yes, can you elaborate on the duplication and how that could be addressed? We cannot not to ask this question. There are reasons that we must ask, but we have answered. I wanted that you must elaborate.
Thank you very much for the question. Yes, in the report by the late Kata Asman's committee,
there was a proposal put on the table, and the proposal was that the Commission for Gender Equality should merge, I think, with either Human Rights Commission. And the reasoning given there was that both institutions deal with human rights. And those of us who are in the gender machinery or gender activists believe that it's not time yet to do that. If you infuse a profound issue like gender equality into a huge agenda of human rights in the country, the chances are that there will be more emphasis on all the other rights that have been there before. It's almost a situation where then when Gender Commission gets there, it will be put in a corner and not be given the importance that it deserves and that it has already in the constitution of our country. So that was for me and many of those of us who did not support that proposal. That was our thinking, that it was not time yet. It's still a long way to go for this country to reach gender equality, and that the institution must be given the capacity to perform the functions that it has been given, that we are seated with many organs of civil society, religious institutions, traditional institutions, the private sector, the media, all need to be monitored enough for them to realize that the issue of gender equality is a constitutional issue that everyone has to seriously consider in implementing their work. Duplication with the women's ministry, I don't believe there's duplication if there's clarity. I think what needs to happen is that there's got to be a situation where people sit down and say, what shall you do? Because the Gender Equality Commission's role is really to ensure, to lift higher than a government department. The Department of Women, Children, and Persons with Disability is a government department that delivers and services the nation. The Commission for Gender Equality's role is to monitor, advocate, research, and advise on policy. And so there is no duplication. It's just a matter of ensuring. But when you look at the document, you can sense that maybe there needs to be more dialogue on exactly where the lines are drawn. The next question?
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Mpumlana. There are perceptions out there about the Commission for Gender Equality. And one is that Commission for Gender Equality is an organization that has failed to carry out its mandate. Another perception is that it is an organization that is based on feminism and should be driven by feminism. Now, my first question is, what is your perception about the Commission for Gender Equality? Secondly, what should the Commission for Gender Equality do to change these perceptions so that the society could perceive it for what it was established for?
I don't think we can ever rule out an organization because of the problems that it has encountered. That's the first feeling I have. So CGE has played its part. It may not have reached the levels
or the expectations of society because of the problems that have already been articulated. But we cannot say it has failed and therefore it should close. The mandate is very clear, is relevant just as much as all the under mandates of Chapter 9 institutions are relevant in South Africa today. Secondly, is it a feminist organization? The definition of feminism is simply people, it's simply an ideology that talks about equality between women and men. But when people talk about feminism, it's almost like it's a thinking or it's an ideology of ultra women who are anti men, who hold weird ideas. I think I would like to plead that feminism is not an ideology of people who are anti-men. Feminism is simply an ideology that says for centuries and for many years, women have been given a raw deal through patriarchal practices, and therefore it is important for society to transform if society is to develop, to give women an equal opportunity to drive transformation and to participate as equal partners in a society. So I would not like to give that impression that I am anti-feminism, because I believe in feminism. Feminism happens through various stages. There was a time when feminism was about women being given the right to vote. At the time when they were feminists and talking about the right to vote, they were seen as the ultra activists of the West Order during those times. Feminism goes through various phases. Feminism of today, for me in South Africa, could be feminism that says we have too many women who are poor in our society today. Something radical has to happen for society to transform. It cannot be then be given a negative connotation, because all that women are talking about is women are being given a raw deal by society, by the way in which society is structured and the way in which society thinks about the role of women because of patriarchal practices. Also because of the way economy is structured and the definition of what work is, because the work that women perform is not regarded as work, is not even classified as work, and yet there's a lot of work that women do in caregiving, in nurturing, that is not classified in the way in which society is an economic system classifies work. So I wouldn't like to say that. My perception is therefore that CGE has had problems. It is known, it is a fact. However, it's not a failed institution. It's just an institution that's not had as much profile and or as many expectations, as many successes as matching the expectations and the mandate that they have been given, and noting the restrictions that they had. What can we do? I still think that CGE can be turned around. We need to do a lot of work to get back a public profile for people to understand, to get partnerships in civil society, to get partnerships in government. I guess partnerships and people who understand our work in Parliament. We have a portfolio committee that can support the work, researchers in the media, for people to really promote the work of the Commission for Gender Equality, because it's an institution that society deserves and that we created for a purpose that has not been fulfilled yet.
Thank you very much.
The last question.
Thank you, ma'am. The last question. What value would you personally add to the Commission for Gender Equality to make it function efficiently and effectively and become more relevant to issues of gender inequalities in our society?
Yes, I think that the value of the aid is just my passion and my commitment to the cause of gender equality. All my life, I've always believed in justice. I've worked for justice, and I believe that society should be structured such that the human dignity of every person, regardless of their status in society, should be respected. And therefore, that passion is a passion I carry with me in any organization that I serve in, and I'll bring it to CGE. Coming to CGE, I really pondered on whether I should accept the nomination, given the problems that have been articulated and given where I've just come from. And I said, actually, that's exactly where we are needed most in organizations that are perceived not to be functioning well, because these are our institutions and they must succeed, and the issues are our issues. And our society will be a successful nation if we bring our passion there. Secondly, I bring to CGE my commitment to systems and processes. I'm a person of detail, and I'm a process and a people's person. I believe that with the gains that are there now with CGE having reached a point where they're almost going to get a clean audit, if I'm given an opportunity to serve, I hope that I can ensure that with everybody else that is already there, they can be supported to keep to the systems that will ensure that they get a clean audit, they use the resources that are limited that they have, and be able to explain how they've used the resources and be able to mobilize a lot of support from networks in order for the CGE to get the recognition that it deserves because of the work that CGE has put into it and the role that I would have played, however minimal, to ensure that it remains a good institution and will one day also be regarded as a successful institution.
Thank you very much. Is there any follow-up question that any member of the matter committee would like to ask? Honorable Marshall.
Thank you, Chair. This is not a follow-up, but would like to know further, because this is an interview. In case of having gone through this interview and being appointed as one of the commissioners, would you like to see yourself being in a permanent post or a part-time commissioner? Thank you.
I've thought about it. Yes, I would like to be in a full-time post. Yes, I would like to be in a full-time post, but I could take part-time as well. I'm very flexible on the matter, really. I'm very flexible. It's just a matter of serving. I live in Pretoria, so it's easy for me to go in and out depending on the need and depending on what the organization asks for.
Thank you. There being no further questions, we would like to take this opportunity of thanking you for our meeting and also of the many individuals that responded to our questions.
relaxed, and also you have, in your responses, you are not just giving a yes and no answer. You elaborate, which demonstrates that you have an understanding of the institution itself and how it's located in the entire transformation agenda. So thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much, too, Nemas.
For lunch. We shorten our time and spend 30 minutes.